Rug Life Immersive Audio Tour. Welcome to the Rug Life Exhibition at the Museum of Craft and Design. We're so glad you're here to enjoy the art, either on-site or online. This guide is an invitation to spend some extra time with us, getting to know the artists and their art. Here's a little bit about the exhibition. Rugs and carpets can be everyday functional objects, works of art, sacred spaces for devotion, and places to weave together symbols of a culture's values, ideals, stories, and aspirations. The earliest known Persian rugs are nearly 2,500 years old. Rugs and carpets are used around the world today to define spaces, keep them warm, provide beauty, and tell stories visually. 14 contemporary artists from different cultures and identities have created rugs displayed in this exhibition that address cultural topics such as religion, technology, social justice, housing, and the environment. The rugs span a range of weaving types, from flat tapestry kilims to rugs with tall, shaggy pile. There is an area rug laid on the floor with the pattern of a dining table and chairs woven in and a real dinner plate set atop it. A traditional Persian rug has been silkscreened with the graphic novel image of Superman. Three rugs depict elements of maps. Some rugs are made of wool, cotton, silk, and other fibers. Others include painted cardboard, plastic combs, and a video animation. The works in this exhibition are laid out in four categories: interweaving past and present, patterning a communal experience, delineating a sense of place, and the playfully named but earnest looming politics. This audio tour will explore 8 of the artworks on display, 2 from each of these categories. We recognize that the soft fibers used to design many of these rugs may seem inviting to explore, and we ask that patrons do not touch any of the pieces. Our Make Art Lab is an interactive space with hands-on opportunities to develop your own fibercraft skill sets. Each month will feature a different practice, including weaving, crocheting, knitting, and punch needle. Guest curators for this exhibition are Ginger Greg Duggan and Judith Hoos Fox from Curator Squared. This program is supported as part of the Dutch Culture USA program by the Consulate General of the Netherlands in New York. Support for Rug Life is made possible in part by the Institute of Museum and Library Services. The Museum of Craft and Design's exhibitions and programs are generously supported by Anonymous, the Windgate Foundation, and Grants for the Arts, with in-kind support by Cadogan Tate. The exhibition layout. Entering the museum from the street, the exhibition hall is straight ahead past the gift shop. On a towering poster board sign to the left as you approach, Rug Life appears in white letters within a central black square on top of a blown-up, close-up photo of a festively colored modern carpet with "Covering New Ground" printed beneath it on the wall. The carpet's stripes are a perfectly pixel-like arrangement of very short, close-together stitches, or loops, of differently colored yarns. Entering the hall, the exhibition space is a bright, high-ceilinged hall with a polished cement floor, which has been laid out in quadrants for Rug Life, with an additional room at the rear for the last artwork and the Make Art Lab. Objects are presented on half-foot-high stages in the open and on the walls, with the hall's hanging system of track lights illuminating them. The nearest piece as you enter is Lieselotte Kobelin's California Drought, which hangs on the right-hand wall of the museum, past a bench positioned parallel in the open. About 20 feet along the same wall, past a slightly protruding pillar, hangs Johanna Hare's brightly colored War Rug 3 El Paso Shooting. Although you could follow this wall unobstructed into the last of the four quadrants, you'll remain in the first if you turn instead toward the left-hand side of the museum, but stop just about 20 feet ahead, close to the intersection of two pieces of wall, both extending only partway across the hall from its center. Ai Weiwei's orange tiger carpet hangs on the wall piece to the right, and a short text about the looming politics works of this quadrant hangs on the left. Around the left partial wall, on its opposite side, is a short text on the works in Interweaving Past and Present in the second quadrant. Ali Chaben's two rugs, titled I Fought the Internet and the Internet Won, Number 1 and Number 2, hang in parallel on the wall adjacent to the left. Oksana Livchenya's Pac-Man and Cossacks hangs on the wall opposite Chaben's, and Slavs and Tatars' catalog rests on a half-foot-tall platform closer to the left-hand wall of the museum. Hanging in a row on the same wall as you follow it into the third quadrant are Wendy Plomp's cardboard carpets, which extend to the left rear corner and onto the back wall. In the open to the right, just as you enter, is Andrea Zittel's dining room-sized carpet furniture drop-leaf table on a low platform. Hanging on the intersecting wall piece behind it is a short text on the artwork's in delineating a sense of place. Close by in the direction of the left rear corner is Grandpa's Monoblock, another work by Ali Shaban, on a small platform. Near and paralleling the rear wall on another very long low platform is Stephanie Sade's Stage of Life. The last two of Plomp's cardboard carpets hang above it on the wall itself. The fourth quadrant begins where Stage of Life ends in the right rear corner of the museum. On the center wall piece extending rearward is Naveen Aladao's pattern-matching purple-blue. A short text about the artworks in patterning a communal experience hangs kitty corner on the wall piece to the left. In between, on a low platform, is Sonia Clark's comb carpet. Noel Mason's Ground Control Mexicali Calexico hangs on the opposite side of the quadrant on the museum wall, and hanging 20 feet to the left of it is the rug featured in the Rug Life poster at the exhibition entrance, Nicholas Galanin's Signal Disruption American Prayer Rug. About 10 feet from the artwork, there is a bench parallel to the wall. Finally, through the entryway in the rear of the quadrant, you arrive at the last piece of the exhibition, Azra Akshamya's animated projection entitled Pelham Sest of 89, appearing on a large low platform in the center in front of a dark partition. Pass the partition to the right or the left, and you are inside the MakeArt Lab, which has materials, tools, and instructions for a different artistic activity each month. Weaving in January, crochet in February, punch needle embroidery in March, and knitting in April. A silent video runs through the steps in the activity and the items you'll need. Parallel the partition as you enter is a line of work tables pushed together with chairs on either side. Close behind it, a work bar with a few stools runs along the rear wall where there are posted and loose laminated instructions, as well as items in labeled bins against the wall. To the right of it is a freestanding pegboard with differently colored skeins of yarn on pegs. And on the right-hand wall, you can add your response alongside others to a written prompt inspired by Rug Life. The markers to use are in a small canister on the podium just to the left of this community wall. Recent participant creations are displayed on three podiums against the opposite wall left of the workbench. Whenever you're ready, you'll be exiting the museum the same way you came in, through the front doors past the gift shop. You could either retrace your steps or follow the right-hand wall of the museum from the fourth quadrant directly to the far wall in the first quadrant. The gateway to the gift shop and the street then is along this wall, roughly halfway between the left and right walls of the museum. The rugs. Looming politics. California drought from the Dryland series, 2024. About the art. Lieselot Kobelins was born in 1994, Deurne, Netherlands, and now lives in North Brabant, Netherlands. She takes on environmental issues in her Dryland Rug series, addressing the drought in her native Netherlands, an area often associated with water. Referencing data from climate change-induced droughts, Kobelins translates those numbers into different textures and manufacturing processes in the creation of the rugs. Within each unique rug, waterways are realized as loop pile tufting, grassy areas are cut pile tufting, with different pile heights also representing underground water levels. Areas with animal loss were literally sheared using sheep shearers. For California Drought, a new creation for this exhibition, Lieselot Kobelins traveled to California to speak to experts on the ground, including in Yosemite National Park and at the University of California, Berkeley. She found many similarities between ecological challenges in California and in her homeland. The white threads here symbolize decreasing snowfall and melting glaciers in the California mountains. Knotted threads represent the rivers, while variations in elevation indicate the various landscape types in California, such as the Central Valley and mountain areas. This accentuates the contrast between the natural lines and those of human influence. California drought description. Hanging on the wall, roughly 8.5 feet tall by 6.5 feet wide, Kobelin's art carpet resembles a topographic map, with a plush surface that undulates like the landscape it represents. Tentacle-like ridges snake down from the high Sierra chain of mountains spanning the carpet close to the top. Tapering almost to a tip, About halfway down, they all abruptly flatten and dissolve at the top of California's Central Valley, spanning the carpet across its middle. Farther down it, parts of the so-called coast ranges appear as low rounded mounds along a wandering edge that resembles California's coastline, and beyond which Koblenz has used the lowest, flattest weave of carpet to represent the ocean. On the left along the coast, a slender gap abruptly opens to a sprawling low flat area above, encircled by the mounds, continuous with the ocean, and recognizable in shape as the San Francisco Bay. Besides that the carpet turns California sideways to convention, it leaves out a considerable amount to the left, or the north, from the Bay Area, and a lot to the right, or the south, too. Yet it does seem to encompass where a majority of California's rain, snow, and other water forms from the sky discharge to the sea by way of the bay. Positioning the Sierra snows above and the ocean below, Koblenz's depicted landscape drains the same as would the water from a leaky pipe above your head. In other words, overall straight down by way of gravity, and patiently running around obstacles such as heads and cheeks where necessary. All of the rivers represented appear in exaggerated width, and like the bay, appear level with and continuous with the ocean in the same low, flat, closed-loop pile from top to bottom. Descending at about even distances apart from the Sierras, three rivers left of the carpet's center are particularly narrow, two rivers to the right are wider, and the farthest rivers right and left are widest. Converging just above the north end of the San Francisco Bay in the lower left, these are the Sacramento River, from directly above, and the San Joaquin River, coming from far to the right along the Central Valley, linked and in parallel with several canals. Besides depicting where these two largest rivers empty via the bay into the sea, Koblenz's carpet charts the San Joaquin River to its source, in the southern Sierras of the carpet's upper right corner, while excluding Los Angeles and the rest of the state, both south and north. The heights of the Sacramento in the carpet's upper left must be the origins of a major tributary, such as those of the American River. Close to where the Sacramento empties into the bay, a wide branch joins it from beyond the left edge of the carpet out of view, representing water gathered from nearly as far north as the Oregon border. The colors of the carpet are muted and gradually varying between dark olive green and beige across most of it, mostly greener and darker in the upper half, and mostly beige below. Koblenz's highlighting of the Sierra snowfields is, as an exception, a bright, blurry ripple of white running through the darkest olive green pile all the way across. Along the way to the valley, the pile turns tan for a short distance in a band across the carpet, then to lighter olive green for the remainder, and until halfway across the valley itself. The carpet below is everywhere shades of beige or gray or in between, seeming to vary somewhat with the undulations in the carpet and proximity to the coast. The color of the ocean is a constant gray, while the water of the bay and rivers everywhere higher up take on traces of the colors around them. Looming Politics, War Rug 3, El Paso Shooting, 2020. About the art. Johanna Hare was born 1987, Reading, Pennsylvania, and now lives in New York, New York. At first glance, Hare's brightly colored War Rug 3, El Paso Shooting, does not immediately conjure its dark subject matter, the deadly shooting at a Texas Walmart in 2019. As with all of Hare's work, major societal issues, ranging from state-sanctioned violence and human trafficking to gun control and consumerism, take center stage, with each rug acting as a call to action. In War Rug 3, El Paso Shooting, the assault rifle used by the shooter is placed as the central medallion in front of a turquoise outline of El Paso, but is rendered in cartoon colors. Icons from the crime scene and multiple Walmart logos fight for primacy, surrounded by a border of ammunition. It is a jarring reminder of a day that started out joyful, families engaged in back-to-school shopping, and ended with the deadliest attack on Latinos in modern American history. As Hare reminds us, it is about, quote, how and whose bodies become ungrievable in dominant power structures, end quote. War Rug 3, El Paso Shooting, description. War rugs became popular around 1979 after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. They feature imagery of weaponry and conflict in traditional rug designs. Where an Afghani war rug blends assault rifles, grenades, and tanks with floral motifs and geometric symbols, Hera decorates the space of her wool and acrylic rug with a repeating pattern of the Walmart Spark logo. 6 uniform lemon-yellow bars that radiate out from a central circle pointing to 12, 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 o'clock. But the sparks on this rug are tilted and organic, with imprecise yellow bars like flower petals. And they seem to be everywhere. 22 of them crowd the design. The rug is just over 2 feet tall and is 4 feet wide. The border is beige, with assault rifle bullets lined up all around. The body of each bullet is a different color from its tip. The bulk of the rug is a rectangular field of cheerful cobalt blue. The same colors from the bullets are also found in the elements in the main field and are garish: lime green, turquoise, black, purple, peach, fire engine red, and mustard yellow. At the center sits a flashy turquoise map of El Paso, Texas, which is shaped like a foot and an extra thick ankle tilted forward as if in mid-stride. Overlaid on the map is the rug's medallion, a rainbow-colored AK-47 assault rifle that points to the left and spans the width of the blue field. A series of other images are spread out, interspersed with the 22 Walmart sparks. At the top left corner, a small yellow plastic crime scene evidence marker with number 1 in black. In the upper right corner, shooting earmuffs that look like a pair of child's headphones with purple and peach ear cups and a bright red headband. Beside the earmuffs is a green snake in the shape of a letter S, with a head on both ends. In the lower right corner, evidence marker number 2 lies on its side. And in the lower left is another double-headed green snake by shooting earmuffs that have red cups and a peach headband. While the Afghani war rugs this one is modeled on are essentially souvenirs, and one could mistake the vibrant, playful colors Hare uses as celebratory, this war rug is anything but. Hare might be commemorating the 22 people injured and the 22 who died on August 3, 2019. And like Afghani war rugs, images of suffering communities are not depicted in the colorful patterns. The viewer is invited to confront images of war and terrorism by observing implements of trauma, but not the trauma itself. Interweaving Past and Present. Pac-Man and Cossacks, 2022. About the art. Oksana Levchenya was born in 1975, Bershad, Ukraine, and lives in Kyiv, Ukraine, where she produces traditional kilim rugs, a technique for carpet weaving dating back to the 16th century. Tradition stops at the process, however, with unique designs that combine folk ornament and ethnic patterns with characters from gaming, television, movies, and other elements of pop culture. Levchenya's hybrid symbolism seamlessly merges the two in a way that is not immediately noticeable. It is only upon closer inspection that one notices the historic Cossacks are actually fighting Pac-Man. These elements of humor belie the serious concern the artist has for historic preservation and ecological cleanliness. The hemp thread that forms the base of the kilims is made of dyed natural wool from Carpathian sheep or vegetable yarn from nettles, which is then intricately hand-woven. Pac-Man and Cossacks description. Oksana Levchenya created this Ukrainian kilim in 2022. Kilims are tapestry rugs, which means they're flat and woven by hand on a loom. They showcase intricate designs of people, nature, and geometric shapes. Pac-Man and Cossacks is a little over 11.5 feet across by about 6.5 feet high. It features a rich gold background with imagery in red, Kelly green, sky blue, beige, apricot, and dark brown. There is a central rectangle of the rug filled with imagery. A red-bordered ring of images surrounds that, and around that ring is a third ring of imagery. The rug's border is a thin stripe of the same dark brown as some of the images, ringed by nearly perfectly spaced little blocks like castle turrets that point inward, giving the border a sawtooth appearance facing inward and a smooth outer edge. The red-bordered center of the rug features 4 tall potted flowering plants lined up across this central rectangle. Near the pots are a couple of large, strolling birds in blue and orange, perhaps storks, and a hunter taking aim at a pair of antelope on the left, while more storks graze peacefully on the right side. Surrounding this center portion is a rectangular ring of repeating patterns, geometric shapes like patterned kitchen tiles, rows of uniformed Cossack soldiers standing at attention, and peacocks. The outer ring of images is on a field of gold. It's here that Levchenya's humor and how she ties her work to tradition becomes very clear. The woven pattern includes repeated motifs rendered in different colors. Starting from the upper left corner and moving counterclockwise are Cossacks on horseback, all facing the left of the rug, pairs of armed soldiers at attention, Pinky, the ghost from the 1980 Pac-Man video game woven in pink, a trio of musicians, and geometric shapes made of diagonal lines and diamond shapes. Continuing around, one encounters Blinky the ghost in red, Inky in green, and Clyde in orange, interspersed with more soldiers marching to the left and others holding red or red and orange flags on horseback on the top and bottom borders, soldiers at attention on the left and right sides, and musicians and dancers in pairs and trios. The Pac-Man game ghosts are like round scoops of ice cream with four little protrusions at the bottom, and they all look to the left with giant, round, black pupiled eyes, completing the trip all the way around the rug. Just before reaching that first pair of Cossacks on their horses, is Pac-Man himself, also facing left, and gobbling up three yellow dots, straight out of the maze full of dots from the original video game. After taking in the two rings of folk imagery blended with Pac-Man ghosts, if the viewer had missed it originally, they are now well primed to realize the four potted plants dominating the center also contain Pac-Man ghosts. The plants all have a straight center stem with at least three pairs of leaf stalks growing out to the sides. At the end of the leaf stalks are flowers, many of which bloom upside down with their petals opening to the ground instead of the sky. It's a clever way to hide the ghosts since they are also rounded on the top and their four little leg-like protrusions poke down like the individual flower petals. Cossacks were semi-nomadic people from regions of eastern Ukraine and southern Russia, well known for military service. Pac-Man was created to give game players an alternative to popular war and sports games of the era. Although Pac-Man was in a never-ending duel with the ghosts, his mission was to eat dots, not to fight, which makes him and his ghosts delightful companions to the Cossacks, musicians, dancers, and local flora and fauna. Interweaving past and present. Palimpsest of 89, 2017. About the art. Azra Akshamya was born 1976 Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and now lives in Boston, Massachusetts. Akshamya's single-channel animation installation, Palimpsest of 89, is an excellent example of reframing of history. Commissioned by the Museum for Modern Art Ljubljana for the exhibition Heritage of 1989, it offers a meta-take on attempts to preserve Yugoslavia's history. Each layer of an animated digital carpet corresponds to four major historic periods: the pre-Ottoman, the Austro-Hungarian, modernist socialist, and post-Dayton. The digital carpet is then projected in the center of the gallery to represent, in Akshamya's words, quote, a model for thinking about the creation of a common heritage through the weaving of integrative and disintegrative narratives and policies related to cultural institutions, end quote. Over the course of the 21 minutes, more symbols or layers are added, removed, or erased, highlighting the revisionist nature of history. Palimpsest of 89 description. A palimpsest is a page whose writing has been scraped or washed off, and new text is printed onto it. If text was only incompletely washed off, eventually the original writing might begin to show through again, allowing otherwise lost stories to reemerge. Akshamya created a 21-minute video animation of a carpet being woven and woven over again with images representing the institutional cultural heritage of Bosnia-Herzegovina. The video is projected from above down onto a 6-inch-high platform on the floor that is 12 feet wide by 7 feet. As the video progresses, new symbols, shapes, buildings, and traditional motifs appear. At times, the carpet feels flat and somewhat simple, tracing on and off the screen. At others, it is a shifting kaleidoscopic flurry of images that race in and out, spread like liquid, and rotate. There is never a moment's stillness. The concept begins like this. A black screen is punctuated by thin, faint vertical lines that will be the template for a rectangular rug based on traditional kilims. A line of green streams down from the top left, makes a tight U-turn at the bottom, and quickly heads up the next line, and continues until it reaches the right of the screen. Without pausing, the line takes a return trip to where it started. Here, weaving the base and the patterns is done in one fell swoop as the green line travels up and down from left to right and then right to left. No sooner are new, brightly saturated lines laid across the screen do the older lines begin to fade away. as if digital threads were being pulled out of the rug as quickly as they were added. Smaller elements rewrite themselves on repeat. Shapes flicker like fluorescent light bulbs, creating a glittery effect. This first digital rug has Ottoman period imagery. At the center, orange geometric shapes are surrounded by a repeating pattern of a madrasa, mosque, Orthodox church, and synagogue. Along the top and bottom third are smaller versions of the shapes and buildings. Colors alter, the rug turns red, and red icons turn blue. The Austro-Hungarian period rug emerges using Art Deco and Vienna Secession movement styles in pink and orange around 5.5 minutes in. One can spot the Sarajevo City Hall, Bosnian Pavilion at Paris Expo, National Museum, Orthodox and Catholic cathedrals, and an Ashkenazi synagogue decorating three horizontal panels, each separated by a row of orange diamonds. This rug also swaps colors, then disappears in a rush like the quivering black and white dots of old TV static. The socialist period, around 13 minutes in, features the modern Skanderia Cultural, Sports, and Trade Center, Saraf Houdin's white mosque, housing blocks, and a central medallion based on the 1984 Sarajevo Olympics logo, a stylized snowflake but without the interlocked Olympic rings above it. This rug begins with rich, saturated colors, red, black, blue, orange, and yellow. As images slide in and out and march up and down the screen, the colors pale until the rug is light orange and gray. The fourth rug is from the post-Dayton period and starts at nearly 16 minutes in. Newer mosques and the commercial center of Sarajevo City Center are represented with patterns that reference the crisscrossing uniform lines of Burberry textiles, patterns on Chinese shopping bags, and a medallion based on Turkish ornaments that blooms from the center, spreads, and fills the rug, bursting out like a flood of fractals. Akshamya states, quote, "Towards the end of the animation, the carpet patterns get disturbed and destroyed, alluding to the destruction of cultural heritage and the shared ideals during the 1990s war," end quote. Because this rug is digital, the imagery she chose doesn't face the same threat of destruction. The video can be played as many times as one likes, and the viewer is certain to detect more nuance and detail each time through. Delineating a sense of place. Cardboard Carpets, 2009. About the art. Wendy Plomp, born 1997 Vilnius, Netherlands, now lives in Eindhoven, Netherlands. The Dutch designer brings the notion of portability and place to the streets, addressing both homelessness and sustainability in her project Cardboard Carpets. Utilizing the ubiquitous cardboard box, she unfolds them into their flat shapes and prints them with decorative designs that transform them from trash to rug. The functional tabs, flaps, and perforated fold markings add to the unique shape and design of each carpet. In Plomp's words, quote, "I noticed how people gave cardboard new functions, like to beg or sleep on, to draw on or use for hitchhiking signs, even to break dance on, which gave me the idea to print the inside of a used box with a carpet pattern so that wherever you are, this carpet can be your temporary clean space, your home," end quote. Just as prayer rugs are meant to demarcate a boundary between sacred and profane space, for the unhoused, cardboard is often the only separation from a dirty street, and the only way to stake any sort of personal space. Cardboard Carpets description. This set contains 10 painted, dismantled boxes lined up along the wall with 20 inches between each. They are held up flat against the wall with tiny, clear clips of the kind that hold up a bathroom mirror. The smallest cardboard carpet is just under 3 feet tall by 2.5 feet wide, and the largest spans just over 5 feet by about 3 feet. Each features its own repeating patterns of elaborate fractal-like webs, flowers, pinwheels, and outlines reminiscent of Islamic architecture. All of the boxes used are standard issue brown corrugated cardboard. While the brown shows through the designs on some, others are painted over in white, purple, blue, and other colors before the designs are added. Some appear quite smooth, while others have stiff corrugation, giving the appearance of undulating but uniform ocean waves frozen in place. This description will focus on one box with ornate designs in dark brown and rich burnt orange paint. It has creases to guide where 21 differently sized segments are to be folded to build it into a box that would be 13.5 inches wide by 15.5 inches long and about 3 inches tall. Unfolded, it doesn't resemble a box at all because this one isn't a perfect cube. Instead, the flattened cardboard takes on a shape similar to the silhouette of a high-backed chair with armrests and a headrest. There are four slim rectangles near the bottom cut out where flaps would be tucked in if one were to reassemble this box. There are three main types of painted imagery: small repeating brown borders like filigree, a brown outline of a central medallion, and orange patterns painted over and around that shape. We'll start with everything in brown. The center medallion resembles a doorway with a vaulted ceiling with parted dark brown curtains that hang one-third of the way down. The doorway has a pointy peak at the top, slopes down on the left and right, and then narrows a bit before widening again and completing the door's outline. At the bottom of the parted curtains are lacy lines like twisted ropes with individual loops of thread pulled out at even intervals. A rectangular shape at the bottom of the doorway resembles a welcome mat with a repeating geometric pattern like starbursts with the lacy rope lining the bottom border of the mat. More elements in dark brown paint form three concentric borders in an arabesque style. This style is known for having very precise repeating and interlacing curves, loops, and flourishes. The first border closest to the center is a thorny vine that alternates one pointy leaf with one full blossom over and over. Just outside the flowering vine is a ring like the stitched edge of a Persian rug with loopy tassels pointing both inside and out. The outermost border is made of a seemingly endless array of diamond shapes. Where each diamond meets the next is a four-petaled flower, and the lines of every diamond are decorated with tiny spirals like fern fiddleheads, so young that they have yet to unfurl. Orange paint is used much less, but it features prominently in two ways. There is a border of orange around the doorway like links in the chain of a necklace. The links are accented by thin lines that curve into the necklace and swoop up to form sharp peaks. A set of these peaks points inward toward the doorway, and another points outward toward the three brown border designs. This ring is off-center so that it overlaps with the thorny vine on the left, but is inside the vine on the top, right, and bottom. While all of these designs are made with delicate lines, the final orange element is a set of large loops, circles, and shapes like croissants that overlay the doorway, its curtains, and reach all the way to the border rings. The painted lines are thicker here, and the design is sparse, so it doesn't block the view through the doorway. While all of the tendrily repeating patterns are organic, sometimes botanical, the dark curtains are the only areas where the paint is solid, allowing none of the brown cardboard to show through. Arabesque motifs can be found in architecture, pottery, book illustrations, and metalwork. As is common for arabesque, the patterns aren't all completed within the available space. Rather than stop at the edges, the fine repeating designs flow over them and are cut off by the cardboard's borders. So while these cardboard carpets may provide a boundary between one space and another, the choice to paint them with arabesque patterns that melt over the edges gives the feel that if they had the space to, they just might go on forever. Delineating a sense of place. Grandpa's Monoblock, 2023. About the art. Ali Shaban was born in Kuwait in 1998 and continues to reside there. He manages to create a profound statement on Arabic identity through the simple act of covering every surface of a standard white plastic chair with carpet. These inexpensive stackable Western-style monoblock lawn chairs are frequently seen in Arabic communities, particularly where there has been resettlement, or in refugee circumstances where temporary homes are made from very little. A semicircle of chairs can provide a setting where members of the community can gather, socialize, exchange ideas, and enjoy a meal or tea together. In an attempt to reclaim some of the sensibility of home, Shaban reinserts elements of the culture that serve to dignify the design of displacement. Grandpa's Monoblock description. Shaban's chair rests on a one-foot-tall platform in the open, facing diagonally across the third quadrant. It has a paradoxically sumptuous upholstered surface with antique oriental carpet designs in burgundy red, yellow, and black, despite being recognizable from its shape as the most disposable and plastic of chairs, the kind molded seemingly from just one sheet of plastic, smooth and contoured to easily stack and unstack, while also providing armrests and a solid feel to the sitter. Up close, the carpet appears to be a mass-produced synthetic one and not all over so detailed or traditional as an antique. Shaban has cut it into shapes specific for each part of the chair, including the legs and the armrests, and, in one piece, the back and the seat, in the process cutting them from parts of the original pattern that would align and work in the places they'd appear. They don't all embrace the lines and symmetry of the chair, but they superimpose on it a warmth, depth, and tradition that wasn't there. Patterning a communal experience. Pattern Matching Purple Blue, 2016. About the art. Born in Van, Turkey in 1972, Naveen Aladao immigrated to Germany as a child and currently lives in Berlin. Aladao often questions, through her work, what it means to be foreign. Searching for sources of cultural identity rooted in heritage can seem antithetical to forming the new social connections often required when relocated. However, it is these fault lines that inform Aladao's work. Her series of rugs, titled Social Fabric, are vivid collages of carpet scraps from different origins and styles pieced together onto wood panels to create various geometric and abstract patterns. Despite pairing often discordant colors and styles side by side, the overall design comes together to create a cohesive whole, referencing the melting pot sensibility of many communities. Pattern Matching Purple Blue is created in the same way, but culminates in the form of a basketball court. The reference to the American sport of basketball, often pick up in nature and something that can bring people together, may seem at odds with the decorative florals and symbols of the rugs of origin, but each component speaks to merging while retaining authenticity. Pattern Matching Purple Blue Description. 6.5 feet tall by 10.5 feet wide, hanging against the wall, Pattern Matching Purple Blue looks like a modern area rug and not quite a fit for any of the rooms you're looking to decorate. In the center medallion of the rug, and as a border along all four sides, the designs are strikingly magenta-colored, antique, geometric, and detailed against a dark-colored background. The carpet more closely surrounding the medallion is ivory-colored over a spacious background with large, flowing line drawings of flowers, stems, and leaves in an encircling arrangement, mostly in two shades of blue, but also some brown. This pattern extends to the four corners and fully along the top and bottom borders, but large half circles have been cut away, mirror opposite each other left and right. Half-circular dark blue carpet pieces have replaced them, both of these partly cut away, and nested themselves with the same simple geometric cluster of four large, contrasting rug pieces. It only takes a moment to recognize in the outline of the shapes overall the pattern that appears in painted lines on a basketball court. The curve of the dark blue half circles is the three-point line. The contrasting nested pieces are the center and margins of the free throw lanes and the circles that surround the free throw lines. The magenta border represents the sidelines. The magenta medallion is for the referee ball toss at the start of play. A cut down the center is the midline, defining the two sides. For the wide middles of the free throw lanes, Aladao used matching halves of a large geometric motif she cut from a traditional flat-woven kilim, which she positioned so that the arrow-like rays of the motif, salmon-colored against a gray background, appear to originate as if from the free-throw line and point as if to their respective hoops, even though the carpet lacks the posts from which to hang them. For around the free-throw lines and in place of the actual center of the motif, Aladao cut circles from a bright yellow-beige, tall, dense, synthetic pile. Slender rectangular pieces of low, closed-loop, salt-and-pepper indoor-outdoor carpet serve as the lane margins. Patterning a Communal Experience. Combe Carpet, 2008. About the art. Sonia Clark was born 1967, Washington, D.C., and now lives in Amherst, Massachusetts. She refers to hairdressers as heroes, saying, quote, "The poetry and politics of Black hair care specialists are central to my work as an artist and educator. Rooted in a rich legacy, their hands embody an ability to map ahead with a comb and manipulate the fiber we grow into complex form," end quote. Black vernacular hair designs serve as inspiration for a number of works by Clark, some made from Black hair, some addressing the subject, and others looking at the tools of the trade. Her unconventional rug, titled Combe Carpet, is quite literally made of hundreds of standard black plastic combs, teeth facing up, forming a rug of sorts. This strong statement of cultural identity, Clark identifies as African American, Caribbean, and Scottish, is loaded with layers of meaning about racial stereotypes, the power of reappropriating cultural symbols, and understanding hair as a literal carrier of DNA as well as a metaphorical connection to one's roots. Comb carpet description. Appearing on a low stage in the center of the room, Clark's carpet is a roughly 5-foot square flat weave of 18 half-foot wide ribbons, which appear to have an unusually stiff, deep, and orderly pile surface. Each ribbon is a train of flat, black plastic combs sandwiched close together, the teeth of the combs appearing as rows of tall, fine pile in perfect parallel, but running 90 degrees opposite on every ribbon that crosses over or under it in a checkerboard pattern. Stiffly undulating over and under to do so, the ribbon's rows of pile subtly fan apart and reconverge like ribs on a slinky. Light glinting off the pointy tooth tops finely highlights every row, giving a luxuriant quality to the pile. The size and stiffness of the ribbons evoke industry or construction. It can require stooping for a side-on, close-up look to see and realize that the carpet is just combs. Around the four sides, the ribbon ends protrude, offering unobstructed views of the combs at the end. From between teeth in two places along the base of the row, wire can be seen to emerge to take a U-turn around the curved bottom of the comb. Seeming to permit the comb to tilt forward and backward, the clutch around the bottom makes the slinkiness of the rows less puzzling. What Clark might be symbolizing is ambiguous. The flat, fine-toothed combs of the comb carpet are a kind chiefly associated with straight hair. As a sculptural and textured surface, on the other hand, the rug might seem to evoke more specifically black hair designs, such as cornrows. And, of course, the color of the carpet is black. Ultimately, it's the novelty and elegance of the comb carpet that looms largest. Thank you. Thank you so much for visiting the Museum of Craft and Design. This exhibition will be up at the museum through April 20th, 2025. We hope you enjoyed the artwork and that you'll visit us again. Audio guide produced by Social Audio Description Collective. Written by Cheryl Green and Oliver Baker. Blind script QC by Robert Kingette and Nefertiti Matos Olivares. Narrated by Cheryl Green.